Hey, it's Film Critics Weekly. We're talking about Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt. Not a great table of guests to talk about it. It's coming up next.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Hey, welcome everybody to Film Critics Weekly, brought to you by the LA Online Film Critics Society. I'm a new member, that's why I just stumbled over, because I'm still getting it in my mouth. I am your host for today's show, John Rocha. I work at Collider. I'm a producer, host, and writer, and as I just said, a new member of LAOFCS. And what better show to start with than a show talking about Quentin Tarantino and his new film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And hey, you don't want to just listen to me. You want to listen to other people who are much more intelligent than me to talk about this film. And we are very lucky to have these incredible guests with me today for us to talk about the film. Let's start off with the lovely Nikki Novak. How are you, Nikki? And tell people where they can find you.
Thank you. You didn't tell me I was one of your favorite people today. You normally do that. I was expecting that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm kidding. Nikki Novak, you can find me at Nikki Novak on all socials, but I'm a correspondent for Fandango and do a lot of other TV stuff.
Yes,
whatnot.
You do. Yes. You've been on Collider a few times as well.
Yes,
love
I
having
have.
You on. Jamie, please tell people who you are and where you're from.
How you doing, guys? Jamie Philbrick. I'm with M-Time China, China's largest entertainment website, and I'm a producer, staff writer, host over at M-Time, and you can follow me at Philbrock on Twitter and Instagram.
I love it. Those are great things. It's been so fun to meet all the new people that I've seen before,
yeah, sure,
or heard before, and get exposure to
new
points
Hawaii
of view.
We met last year.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
Was that the one I was on?
Yep.
That's where I met you.
For Jungle, yep. Not Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, Jumanji.
Jumanji.
Yeah. Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
I knew nobody. I went totally cold. At the time, it was Schmoes Know and Collider. They sent me to interview The Rock because I'm such a massive fan of The Rock.
Right.
And I didn't know anybody. I felt like I was in a new school. Like, and I was the fat kid that nobody wanted to talk to. And I glommed on to Mike, who works, I think IGN or something. And I talked to him a little bit, but then eventually he got sick of me. So I was trying to find new people to talk to.
But this is how we met.
Yes.
So I went directly after. It was one of those setups. It was outside. I'm
yeah,
sure people
right.
remember the junket looking like it was outside with everybody. And we, you know, so you're sort of lined up the next person that, you know, if you're going next, you sort of line up and you
yeah.
can watch the person ahead of you. And we talked briefly
yes.
before you went in. You were ahead of me. And he was so excited because he had like a belt for
yeah.
him and
yeah,
the
yeah,
whole
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
cool.
and so I'm just sitting there with my phone. No, it was great.
Yeah.
I was sitting there with my phone and I thought, well, this dude's so excited. He's going to want a couple pictures with The Rock. So I just took some candid
oh,
photos.
Is that nice of you?
And then later on,
right?
I didn't even know your name. And I
yeah.
said to somebody, who is that guy that, you know, I think he's like outlaw or something.
yeah.
And I sent them to you.
Yeah.
And that's how we became friends.
Well, you introduced yourself to me and I was like, I know you. You've
yeah.
got a nickname. I've seen you somewhere. Are you the chief? Are you the cowboy? Are you the, I don't know what it, but the outlaw. That's
yeah,
how
yeah.
can you forget?
Yeah, well, speaking of outlaw, those are cowboys. That's certainly prevalent to the movie we're talking about today. Once
what
upon
a
nice segue.
Segue.
Nice segue. That's why you're the outlaw.
That's
why you're hosting this thing today.
Once upon a time in Hollywood, all of us got to see it ahead of time. This is a spoiler review, right? We can break
no.
it all down. Oh, non-spoiler.
I think
Mr. Tarantino would like us specifically not to spoil one thing that we're probably all
oh,
aware of.
Right,
but
okay.
short of that, I think we
all
can
right.
talk about the film.
Ryan,
okay.
is it a non-spoiler, Ryan? We're not supposed to talk about it?
It's a non-spoiler.
Oh. Got it. Okay.
Okay.
Well, we're definitely going to break the film down as much as possible without spoiling
oh,
anything
gosh.
About it, which is really difficult because this is
yeah.
this
mm-hmm.
is a really interesting, fantastic film that is a slice of 1969 when so much was happening in the country and so much was happening in terms of transitioning from this like flower power hippie love thing to a little more darker edge on the fringes of society bleeding into the mainstream, and that includes the Manson cult, who killed Sharon Tate in that year, Roman Polanski's girlfriend at the time. She was pregnant. It was a horrible massacre. And a number of other people were killed as well. And this became legend, and it changed Hollywood forever. I was speaking to a producer over at ET Live. I did ET Live earlier this week. And he said, he was in Hollywood
right.
when it all happened. He was of that age. He was like 20 years old or whatever. And he said,
Even actors who weren't of name were hiring bodyguards so that they would not get killed, like Sharon Tate was killed in
Vince. I'm a big Steve McQueen fan. I read every biography on McQueen, and that's a big thing that you see in different biographies. I think he was actually at the Tate's house earlier that day or something like that, where they were supposed to go over there. And then he was pretty freaked out for years on end afterwards.
Oh, who would
have been? He, you know, literally missed being there by maybe a few hours.
Is that well known?
That's pretty well known. I know I've heard his wife say it in one of the, or his first wife say it in one of the documentaries.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to break it all down and talk about the film, as I said, as much as possible. But let's take a look first into Tarantino's career a little bit before we jump into the film. This is his ninth film. He's talked exclusively all the time in interviews in his mania that he is only going to do 10 films, which I find to be a random number for a guy who people absolutely love and revere as an already great filmmaker. Probably halfway through his career, people were calling him a great filmmaker. Right. Jamie, what has been like what has been his effect on you as a moviegoer and movie lover?
Yeah, I mean, I was in college when the first Pulp Fiction came out. Or the first Pulp Fiction, it's only been one. But when Pulp Fiction first came out, I should say.
You're saying there's a chance.
but when it first came out, I remember it was the first movie as an adult I chose to see in a theater multiple times.
Yeah.
I think I probably saw it 4 or 5 times in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. And it just blew me away. Like, I'd never seen anything like that as far as storytelling, the way, the structure of the film, having these different stories kind of meet together, the violence and the humor of it all together. I was a big Bruce Willis fan, so I think that probably is what got me to the theater in the first place to see it. Yeah. But then this guy, Tarantino, and you're like, well, who's this guy? And you sort of had a sense, even though I was young at the time, I think I had a sense that this is a guy who's going to be the director of my generation and is going to be like the guy for a while. So, his films meant a lot to me. And Jackie Brown is one of my favorites and Inglourious Bastards. And the one thing I want to say, but the caveat about what he was saying about the 10 films, and I, you know, when he said that too, it was kind of like, yeah, sure, Tarantino, yeah, 10 films, whatever. I think the caveat to that is 10 feature films.
Oh.
I feel, because I've done a couple interviews with him recently, and he sort of adds that on. He's like, this, I'm planning to do 10 feature films. That doesn't mean that he couldn't make a movie with Netflix or make a movie.
Yeah,
that's the way I kind of understood it the last time.
Or, God forbid, TV movies, maybe.
But he's so anti all of, I mean, you know, I don't know.
With Netflix, he just did that thing with Hateful Eight that was interesting. I don't know if you guys checked it out. Yeah. It didn't really improve the movie much for me, but that's probably my least favorite of his movies. But
and we'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah, but so he is open to, I think, the idea of streaming, at least through this little experiment he did with Netflix.
They all come around eventually. What about you, Nikki? What's been your relationship with Tarantino?
Well, I mean, when I saw Pulp Fiction, I wasn't remotely even ever thinking I would ever live in Los Angeles, be in this business. I don't even think when I saw it, I probably heard the name Tarantino, but was young that I just sort of went, that was probably one of the coolest movies I've ever seen. And it does, when you see something when you're that young, it affects you in a profound way. Yeah. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that we all do now, even talking about The Lion King recently, where your nostalgia for something and where you were in your life and how much it meant to you at the time. Because back then, I mean, now we all consume so many films and so much, you know, streaming and everything. Yeah. Back then it was a really special thing to go to the movies.
That's a really good point.
And that was a special moment because it was like nothing I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And to this day, I watch things and go, if it weren't for that film, this would not exist. I think a lot of HBO wouldn't exist if it weren't for, because he sort of paved the way for that edgy kind of dialogue. And
he definitely changed the zeitgeist.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, it's something to stand out when a new wave of change comes in the film world. It's something to be the director who survives, right? If you look at the 70s, Scorsese, Lucas, Spielberg, all these directors, and how many of them have stayed the course and stayed consistent? Really only Scorsese and Spielberg. Coppola even fell off. Like, also, it says
De Palma,
something.
Lucas, all of them. Right. No, I totally am with you on that.
They all fell off. Yep. But with the independent film movement, it's always been Tarantino that has essentially been the standard bearer. Soderbergh kind of went and did his own thing.
And Rodriguez, and he had a couple other guys. Right. But Tarantino's still the guy of that independent and film culture where and other guys have become studio
directors. Yeah, or done other things or fallen off or stopped doing projects or not been, you know, the quality has not been as high as Tarantino. Tarantino has always maintained consistent quality. Whether you have a least favorite, it's still a quality film. And that's the difference.
Yeah, and what I thought was great too is think about the renaissance of Travolta.
Yeah.
And what, you know, a risk that would have been at the time. And a bold choice, and he's always made bold choices since then, but at the time to do something like that, and I'm trying to think, had other people done that in the past where they'd brought back a big
No, he was definitely
star.
The first to do it on that scale in that way. Yeah. And I think, you know, Robert Forster has a career today because Pam Grier has a career today.
Yeah.
You know, I think certainly there's a lot of Carradine got a last sort of thing before he passed. So I think that that's a really good point. Like Tarantino is one of those directors and may be kind of the only director to have ever sort of done that in that way.
Yeah, for me, it was it started with Reservoir because it was I was like 25 or 26 when the thing came out, and I used to bring people over because at the time, I didn't know what I was doing with my life. I was in the military. I was working at a bookstore at night. I just didn't know what I was doing with my life. And film was always, though, the one thing that I could turn to and enjoy and lose myself in, and even if I was depressed about my life, I could enjoy film. And seeing the independent film movement and being at the beginning of it and reading all the articles promoting these films and going to the theater to see these films, taking my time to go see them, Reservoir Dogs was the one that like blew my mind. And so I would bring people over to my house, or to my apartment rather, to watch it on VHS. I bought the VHS, it was like $95 or whatever, and I would bring people over, and that's became my, and people would, nobody ever walked away from it not loving that movie.
Do you remember, what year did that movie come out?
I think it was 95 or 96.
Yeah, because I remember... Yeah. The Lion King came out in 94.
And those 95.
So Reservoir's probably 94.
I remember those being like the two big movies that stood out for me from that time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was like yin and yang, like Reservoir and Lion King.
Well, you could argue the height of animation to the beginning of a new movement.
And that's the other thing is, I think in a way you could really, I mean, that independent cinema that came out in the 90s, I mean, Tarantino really was the godfather of that, and really the only one who's continuing to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to talk about the nine films, but I mean, there are some that I love a lot more than others, but there's not a bad film.
Exactly.
There's not a bad film.
Exactly.
He hasn't made
that's
a bad
what I'm
movie. He's made movies that are better than others.
Well, I have a different, I'm going to have a different relationship with Tarantino than both of you. I know when we get into it.
All right. But, Well, the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was part of the list of movies that were coming out this week. And you know, we do on the LAOFCS is we have a pick of the week. And the pick of the week this week by a landslide was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which tells because obviously it's about Hollywood. We're all film nuts and we love Tarantino, so why wouldn't it win? But some of the other films that came out this week are Abstain, or are coming out this week rather, Abstain, The Mountain, Honeyland, which I have been pitched to go see as a fantastic documentary about this woman who takes care of these bees and her relationship with these bees.
Oh, that's a documentary.
Yeah, it's a doc. Oh, okay. It's a documentary. Mike Wallace Is Here is another documentary, which I had the pleasure to interview Abby Belkin from one of my podcasts. It's called The Deep Cut that I do over on Collider Conversation. You can go find it. It's going to drop tomorrow. He talks about making the movie and what it was like working with it. He's from Israel. He came over here from Tel Aviv 3 years ago. 3 years ago! And just got interested. He wanted to explore the idea of news and the news and the changing landscape of news. And he just kept seeing these Mike Wallace interviews and Mike Wallace conversations. And he just veered. He changed his documentary to veer towards Mike Wallace.
That's cool.
So Mike Wallace became the reason that he kept going. And he was able to still prove his point about the changing face of news through Mike Wallace's conversations with Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
So he does a fantastic job with this documentary. Highly recommend. It's only 90 minutes, but it's a great revisit for those of you who know Mike Wallace. And those of you who don't, you revisit a time when journalism was more than just about talking heads. It was about actually getting the information, asking the hard questions, and people being forced to answer them, which I really appreciate.
I just want to go, I go on tangents sometimes, but it just reminded me of something. And that's, I just went down a rabbit hole and watched a bunch of old Barbara Walters interviews on YouTube. And literally spent, like, at one point, it was like 1 a.m, and I'm like, just one more. And it just, that era. And do you both do it as hosts? Do you sit, because I'm fascinated by interviewers.
Oh, yeah.
I would love love to do it at the level that Mike Wallace is. Yeah. Studios would never allow you to do it now.
Right. That's
well, there's no time.
Yeah. There's no time. Right.
Yeah, I mean, what do you, to get an hour or 30 minutes with somebody, it's impossible
but
now.
But even I think it was Esquire that did the interview for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Right. I don't know if you read it or not, but it is a fabulous interview.
Yes.
And they talked about... He talked about, you know, spending the afternoon with them. Yeah. And I thought, how did you get all that time?
You probably know the name. There's a great old school writer, and he wrote a story that was famous in a newspaper. This is how far we're going back, in the 60s.
Yeah.
That was like, he came to L.A. to do an interview with Frank Sinatra, and then Sinatra never showed up. So the interview basically was with all of Sinatra's help.
Oh,
like,
wow.
The butler, like, I spent the day with Sinatra's butler or whatever. But this was a guy who got to... Guy Talese. Hearing
great
about him and like you said, like, getting the opportunity to spend time with the people that you're actually... And actually get to know them... For an interview is something that's, you know, kind of obsolete now.
I think it's all to print now. Magazines now get that access on camera. It rarely happens. I was at the Blinded by the Light junket, and I was talking to an old school person who's done junkets for a number of years, and she was telling me, she's like, we used to get 13 minutes with them, and then it was 12, and then it was 8, and then it was 6 for a long time, and now it's 4. And it's like, wow.
And you're lucky if you get 3.5 in that 4
exactly,
minutes.
Exactly, right. Or you get more than one question. And the other movies that are coming out this week are Tel Aviv on Fire, The Ground Beneath My Feet, For Sama, The Field Guide to Evil. Do you guys know any of these movies? Yeah, I don't
it's
either.
It's been all about one movie.
It's pretty much Once Upon a Time this week, and that's it. Yeah, that's
all right.
Exactly.
Well, we should probably get into them.
But we mentioned them, and we will check them
out. We did a brief review, as Scott asked, which was Mike Wallace, as much as I can review. But our movie pick of the week is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's the one that everyone's been waiting to see, looking forward to see. As we said at the beginning here, Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt starring in this one, Margot Robbie is Sharon Tate. It's an assortment of actors. Mike Moe, who I also got to interview, he plays Bruce Lee in the movie. Steve McQueen is in the
Damian
movie.
Lewis.
Damian Lewis.
With the worst wig I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, but also strangely does look like Steve McQueen.
Yeah, he does.
I'm a huge Damian Lewis fan. My favorite show is Life, which was his show before he did Homeland.
Canceled too early.
Yeah, way too early. But anyways, he's such a great actor. So when I heard, and he looks just like him in the face.
Yeah, he does.
But Steve McQueen never had hair like that. I think I know what they're going for.
Yeah.
They're trying to do his Le Mans look, which would have been like 3 years after 1969.
Fair point.
He should have been in the bullet, like, shaved head, but like close cut bullet haircut, because this would have been 69. Right. He would have literally just finished shooting Bullet. I don't even know if it would have been in theaters yet.
Yeah, that's
so
good point.
It was weird they had this like gangly red kind of curly wig on Lewis that was the only thing that took me out of it. Otherwise, you know, he's great. I mean, it's just one scene. He's just in this one little short scene. But
he was great.
It's great. Yeah.
Maya
yeah.
Hawke is in this one. Uma Thurman's daughter, which I leaned over to Christian Harloff. We were watching and I said, Tarantino has directed her mom and her in a movie he's directed long that he's been able to direct Uma Thurman and Uma Thurman's daughter in a movie.
And Bruce Willis's daughter is
in
the movie.
Oh, yeah. Uma Willis is in the movie as well. Another example.
And then did you notice the original Spider-Man?
Yes, Nicholas Hammond.
Nicholas Hammond.
He's
the director.
He's the director.
The director of the cowboy show
with the white hair.
Yeah,
that's Nicholas Hammond.
He was the first Spider-Man, live-action Spider-Man.
When you watch it, there's so many fast little cameos, and so many of them. And I was at the premiere, and I saw so many people that had to kind of reintroduce themselves, because it's like, oh, I played this in the movie, because they were so heavily disguised. It was cool. I mean, there's so many little cameos. It's one of those you got to go back and watch and go, oh, yeah, that's
And Nicholas Hammond's other claim to fame besides Sound of Music, do you know what it is?
No.
On the episode of The Brady Bunch, where Marsha gets in the face hit with the football, and the football player won't go out with her because her nose is bloated.
Is Nicholas Hammond
the was Nicholas Hammond was the football player.
Wow.
I think he played the same character in another episode, too, where there was something with Greg.
Funny, because they fashioned the Hawaiian voodoo doll they get from Nicholas Hammond as well. He posed for that. No, I'm joking.
you totally had me. I would have been like, oh, wow, yeah, he got really involved.
All right, let's get into this. Nikki, rather. Let's start with you.
Go to Jamie first. I relinquish my time to the gentlewoman from the Palisades. Please go first. All right, Jamie, tell me, what is your feeling and reaction to the movie?
So I love the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I got to see it at Cannes. Was the first time I saw
it. Congratulations.
And so I've seen it a second time now with the theatrical. And it's actually changed. He added a scene since Cannes. Yeah, a little inside.
Nice.
I don't think this is spoil anything to say the Great Escape scene is new.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the visual effects weren't ready at Cannes.
Okay.
So, I loved it. First of all, DiCaprio and Pitt are amazing together. I mean, just amazing together. Mm-hmm. I really loved... I think that in a way... Pitt has the showy part and DiCaprio has the hard work
mm-hmm.
because he's really laying on the character. You know, he's doing a little bit of a stutter when he's not, you know, the alcoholism and all that kind of stuff that you can see him doing. But Pitt's got the showy part. Pitt's got the fun part. He gets to be Pitt. You know what I mean? He gets to be completely Brad Pitt. And I love that character, Cliff Booth. I mean, I think that might be one of my favorite Tarantino. I told Tarantino this last week. Wow. That might be my favorite Tarantino character of all time.
Wow.
Absolutely love Cliff Booth. So I love this. The film, you know, it's not, it doesn't really have a story, as mm-hmm. Tarantino has said. Like, there's not really a plot. It's kind of a hangout movie like Jackie Brown where you sort of get to know these characters. But there's the ticking time clock of what we know in reality is going to happen mm-hmm. before this movie's over, whether it happens or not. We know that that happened in real life. So it's sort of, it's got that urgency throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you're just like enjoying these characters, you know, and I love the friendship and the camaraderie between Pitt and DiCaprio is fantastic.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie as Sharon Tate is awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been some criticism that she's not in a lot of the movie, but I think that was kind of the point. Like, I think the point was that it's really about these two guys and how the world around them is changing and how they deal with that, as opposed to really about the Manson murders and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree with you.
But as we're talking about these supporting roles, Al Pacino, Kurt Russell, mm-hmm. Damian Lewis, I mean, I love seeing all of them. I thought, Lena Dunham.
Yeah.
Was born to play a member of the Manson.
I didn't even recognize her first.
No, it took me a second.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
She's perfect in Dakota's. Squeaky was perfect.
It took me a while to realize who that was with Dakota.
Bruce Dern gave us some dirty. He gave us a dirty, you know. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I would put it in his top five for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Strong
absolutely
statement.
Have it as,
already
in his top five.
How many times have you seen it?
I've seen it twice.
Okay.
I put it at the end of five.
Right.
You know what I mean? I can name three or four of his movies I would rank before.
Okay.
But it's strong top five for me. I mean, it's my favorite movie of the year, for sure.
So far.
Oh, wow. Absolutely.
Wow, that's a very strong statement.
And I really hope Pitt gets an Oscar nomination at least.
This is where we need to start. Because for me, and we'll get to Nikki in a minute, for me, it's about the friendship. This is what sells it. And you're right. You can say that DiCaprio does the work, but I think Pitt... does.
I don't mean to diminish Pitt's work either.
No, of course not. But he's got the...
But it's very natural.
He's got this simmering animal-like quality just below the surface, right? And in every scene that he's in, both brutal and not brutal, it's always just waiting there. But there's such a calmness to him. He's almost like the ocean until the ocean becomes this massive wave and crushes you. He's incredible.
What an analogy.
I'm just saying.
He's just so cool.
So is the ocean. It's like cool until you mess with it.
And then
you get the horns. And so he's like great in this. But I also think what's great is, once again, we get these awesomely well-written scenes. We get to really like salivate at the meal that we're eating with the way Tarantino writes his movies. I know Nikki and I have had conversations about this film already, but Julia Butters, I think this is the young girl,
mm-hmm.
she is incredible in that scene with DiCaprio, holding her own, going back and forth with him, and actually winning the scene out from under him. And then them having that scene later on with him and the late, great Luke Perry, when she compliments him, then DiCaprio has a fantastic moment for himself. But for me, there are two things that stand up. DiCaprio in the trailer is maybe one of the greatest things I've ever seen to show you what it's really like.
Which we've already disagreed about that.
Yeah. She has no cons. She thinks people don't look in the mirror and talk to themselves.
Here's my thing.
They absolutely do.
Okay. Men do this
absolutely.
All
what
the
if
time.
I, what if, where have I been in my entire... Because, you know, there's a lot of... We talked about this before.
Yes, we did.
There are a lot of movies where, whether it's a guy getting ready to ask a girl on a date, and it's like, okay, will you go? And they talk in the mirror, whatever. I've never related to those scenes in my life. And we talked about about. And this is not a spoiler because it's in the trailer that, you know, he messes up a scene and he goes back to his trailer and he has this epic meltdown.
And, it's longer in the movie.
And he, and my only critique of that scene, and then I'll talk about how I felt about the movie, but my only critique in that scene was I was like, he was talking to himself out loud going, oh, you're so this and you're so that. And I said to Roke, I said, people don't do that. Because here's
people do
what,
that every
because
day.
I used to be an actress. I know you acted. Yeah. I don't know if you ever were an actor, but you're like,
those were the days.
But here's the thing. When you screw up a scene or you screw up an audition, what is the first thing an actor does? They sit in their car on the way home and they say their lines out loud over and over and they go, damn it, see, I'm so good in my car. I'm an Oscar-worthy performance in my car. Yeah. You say it out loud, you go over it. And so I was expecting that. Mm-hmm. But we argued in terms of you said that was like the greatest scene in the movie. My favorite scene in the movie was the scene that preceded that. And again, it's not a spoiler because obviously he screws up a take to make him go in the trailer. Yeah. That shot, the way that was shot and that scene, people who haven't seen it, watch out for that scene because DiCaprio, as an actor, having to screw it up and then reset and that was brilliant. To me, that outshone the meltdown.
100%.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah, that was a great scene. Absolutely.
Unreal. Best scene in the movie, I thought.
What's your thoughts on the film overall?
So, okay. As you guys were talking, I was like, oh, yeah, remember to say this. I could probably talk about this movie for hours and find so many things to say. I know this is going to be a big statement for you guys, but this is my favorite Tarantino movie.
What?
Because.
Number one?
Well, because you know my history and how I feel about violent films.
It's worthy.
I have a real issue with a lot of violent films, and I have a hard time with them in the first place. And Tarantino's been that person that I've always loved him as a filmmaker. I love his ideas. I love his characters. I love the cinematography. I love everything about his films. What I don't necessarily always love is all the violence and the subject matter.
Yeah.
And this was the subject matter I've been waiting for. The late 60s, Hollywood, the beauty of it. And the one critique that I keep hearing over and over from people was it didn't really have a story. And I'm like, that's what I loved about it. Because I love films like Lost in Translation that just are a slice of life. They just exist on screen. And when you can just be that fly on the wall experiencing a day or 2 days in the life, I could revel in that. I could watch this movie over and over and over again for that reason, because I just thought it was magnificently done. Loved the characters. There's so many, and it's one of those films that I'm sure you can both picture rewatching over and over and over again and finding new things in it. And I think 10 years from now, it's going to age like a fine wine. I think it's an incredible movie. But that's just my personal taste. Well, I'm not saying it's the best Tarantino movie. I'm saying I enjoyed it the most.
Right, right. You must be a great Terrence Malick fan then if you don't like stories. I love Terrence Malick for that reason.
Right.
You know, right? I just get I get a little tipsy or I get a little altered and I go into a Malick film and I have a great time. Because it just feels like now his late Malick films are basically lying in the water and going with the ocean. It's basically Malick films. Right. And then you wake up at some point, it's over. But I see your point. It is definitely a fun world to be in. He makes you want to be in this world. He makes you want to enjoy it and savor it and brings it to life in such a vibrant way, both positive and negative. And by negative, I mean like that scary scene in the ranch when he's going to see who he's going to see
that
there.
That might be my favorite scene.
Yeah, it's the few times that you feel the real terror in this movie. And then the other scenes with him and Brad having these DiCaprio and Brad having these like real honest, awesome exchanges between men in the late 60s, right?
Yeah.
I love all of that.
I love the fact that Brad Pitt, we discussed this, was a man in this movie.
Yeah, sure. Right.
And there's a scene on the roof and it's like, females will like it, but the thing about
not
it
just
is...
just females, I imagine.
Well, yeah, yeah. But, you know, whatever, you know what I mean. So, I think it just brings back, like, the 60s when the McQueens and those type of actors were just men.
No,
and
Pitt's very much in that mold.
Totally.
And that plays into this Cliff Booth character perfectly.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, one thing you said about the violence, I actually, since I saw this a second time, I found... let me say this without giving anything away. There's a lot of violence at the end.
Yes.
Towards the end of the movie.
Yeah, sure.
We'll just say that.
Sure.
I found myself howling in laughter the second time I saw the movie.
Okay.
in those violent scenes, when that violence is happening, I found it funny and not horrific the second time around. Maybe it's because I was immune to it at that point because I knew it was coming or what, but I've heard actually Norm Macdonald, the comedian, has said many times about Tarantino that he finds all of Tarantino's movies to be comedies.
Oh, I agree. 1,000%. Oh, absolutely.
I don't know that I 100% believe, but there's certainly a comedic element.
Yes.
And maybe more so than other filmmakers that claim to be comedic filmmakers.
I think he finds the humor in the human condition of these people, no matter where their status is in life. Because he rarely does films about people of higher status. They're always people who have the lower kind of area. Because look at Booth. Booth is a struggling actor trying to reclaim what he once was, which was a leading man in a TV show. And we find out why he ended up not being that anymore and how it's kind of his fault. Right. And then what he's trying to reclaim, same thing. Brad Pitt was his stunt double. He's just trying to hold on to whatever he's got. And so just about all the films are about people of kind of a working class level.
That's interesting. You're so right.
Yeah, who you find the humor of life. Yeah. In, because we all do, who are not billionaires, we find the humor in life because we have to fight for our lives and survive and do whatever. And so there are humorous situations that come out of those everyday interactions that I think Tarantino does a fantastic job of capturing in his movies. So I would agree than what Norm Macdonald says. They're all comedies because you certainly do laugh through most of them.
Well, a lot of his violence, too. Not in the all of his movies.
The violence is humorous.
But it's juicy. Yeah. It's like juicy, entertaining. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Can we start a little bit of criticism with the film for me? I'll throw my two things out there and you guys can obviously speak about what you felt. I felt that some of the characters on the fringes of the DiCaprio-Brad Pitt relationship were really light and had no weight to them and no complexity and no nuance. And so I think we lost a little more of the richness that we could have had in this world if he had spent a little more time giving them either more screen time, more scenes, or giving their scenes a little more weight. And I speak specifically about Bruce Lee. I would have liked to have seen a little. We do get a lot. We do get some Bruce Lee. I would like to have seen some more.
He was great.
Mike Moe did a great job. And there are other characters. And then my other complaint is actually a little bit about the violence at the end. I think he wants us to bring in what actually happened and do the work for him. And I find that I agree with that. I think there's another way he could have gone about this that would have solved that problem for me. But I may be in the minority because a lot of people say they love the ending and love the violence at the ending. So I'll leave it at that. What do you guys think? Do you have any negative things to say or any issues with the movie?
I absolutely had no issue with the ending. I absolutely loved the ending. I felt, in terms of your conversation about, you know, them spending not enough time on certain characters, I'll play devil's advocate, that I just feel like this was, again, he did exactly what he intended to do with this film. This is a slice of life. And it just sort of was supposed to be this idyllic time that sort of, when you think about 2 days in your own life, with the exception of the ending that something happens, that we all know something happens.
Yeah.
If we were to have a slice of your life over 2 days and people float in and out, I think it's just I think he absolutely did it the way he intended to do it.
Yeah, but would you like Nicki Novak to only have one scene with that? I feel like Nicki Novak would want to be seen.
I'm not going to answer that, but I'll answer.
John's story. Nicki Novak only has one scene. Like Sharon Tate, you kind of
But I will say about the Sharon Tate thing.
Yeah.
I heard that before seeing this. She didn't get enough, and we all heard about the New York Times reporter.
I was in the room when it happened.
Oh, wow. Well, when he said, "I reject your hypothesis," which I've used that
and
saying
by the way,
since
good
then.
For him. I thought that was a gotcha
question. Defend your film.
I thought it was a gotcha question.
But my issue was not, I thought she had plenty of screen time.
I did too.
I thought she had a lot of screen time. I thought, and again, I think he did what he intended to do with her character, is have her just sort of float in and float out and just sort of be this
100%.
I think that was sunshine that just came in and then the sunshine goes behind the clouds and then the sunshine comes back in. And so I think he did exactly what he intended to do with her. And I felt like she got a lot of time.
Okay.
Jamie, I completely agree. Yeah, I think that was her purpose. I think she fulfilled it. I thought she had plenty. I didn't have a problem with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
What you were saying about the other characters.
Yeah.
I don't disagree, and would have been great to see. I would love to see a little bit more Steve McQueen with a better wig. I would like to see a little bit more Bruce Lee. But at the end of the day, I think what you're saying, he intended to make a movie about these two guys.
Yeah.
It was just about these two guys and everything else that kind of... The only other critique I would say, which we've heard a lot of people say at this point, is I don't know if we needed to remake every episode of Bounty Law and show them in their complete entirety. I mean, I get it. Yeah. I went for the ride. I mean, I'm with it at the beginning. Yeah. But maybe... For the sake of the film, we could have trimmed a little bit in that. But listen, I expect a Tarantino movie to be 2.5 to 3 hours long. Yeah, I expect it to have a lot of stuff going on that's not necessarily necessary to the plot, but is super interesting to the overall movie. So I'm along for the ride. So I'm good. You know, I wouldn't really say any of that's a real critique that bothered me about the movie. But, you know, if you were... Maybe cut out a little bit.
Yeah, that's another thing. I felt like maybe this was maybe 15 to 20 minutes too long. You could have. I think it's a new editor that work with him on this movie, not the editor he'd had before. So maybe that kind of played into it. I will push back or disagree with Jamie because I would have loved to have seen the whole series of Bounty Law because I'm a terrible fan of Westerns. I mean, I would have too,
but in the context of a two-hour movie. Totally, with the story. The interesting thing was at Cannes, the big critique that everyone was saying was like, it's just too long. And then at the press conference, he goes, yeah, I'm adding another scene. And we're like, well, is he trolling the critics in France? Like, what's he doing?
When we got towards the end and I knew it was coming up on the finale, I thought... We'd only been in it for an hour.
It does seem short. I don't disagree. It does for a 2:45.
Yeah, 2:45.
It does feel not too long. It doesn't feel like too long.
Yeah. I will say this. When I walked out of the theater, I said, I don't need to see this again for a while. But the last few days I've spent talking about it on Collider, talking about it with you, talking about it here. It stays in your head. And now I can't wait to go see it again this weekend and kind of just sit back like you did, Jamie, the second time. Yep. Sit back and just savor it and enjoy it.
And can we just talk about the music real quick,
The music's great.
I mean, obviously Tarantino always hits it out of the park with the music in his films, but... I mean, just the trailer comes up, I hear the Neil Diamond song, I'm like, oh, I gotta download that, I gotta hear this, you know what I mean? It's really, the whole, he fills the whole package there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also think, and I do feel he's showing off a little bit, but it was nice to see him pay homage to all the movies.
Hey, he's the greatest filmmaker of all time, he can show off all he wants, right?
And he does, I will say this, and this is not a spoiler, but... the Sharon Tate scene when she goes to see herself in the movie theater, which is in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler, is one of the sweetest scenes that you'll ever see in a film about an actor looking at themselves.
I was just going to say, I thought it was really brave to not put her in the Dean Martin show. Very easy could have Margot Robbie playing Sharon Tate watch it, and that they just let Sharon Tate's actual image play, which I thought was really brave and sweet of Tarantino.
Well, I think it was an homage to her, and I think he had to make that choice, and he made, and I think it was the right choice to make, but it was the only scene in the movie that took me out of the movie, because I was watching Margot Robbie watch Sharon Tate, don't really look alike. I mean, they do. Yeah. From far away, but
I think
at one
point they were going to go the other way, because I've heard that Danny Strong was cast as Dean Martin. So that makes me think that maybe they had, and that his scene was cut, so it makes me think that maybe they actually shot that scene within the movie.
Yeah.
And didn't use it, but I don't know.
I also heard about another actor that was cut that was going to play another role, but I don't think we've dropped that news yet on Collider, so I'm not going to reveal it here. But there's a lot behind the scenes of this movie that is fascinating. I can't wait. I hope they write a book about this movie.
Oh, I should give a shout out to my friend.
Please
my friend Spencer Garrett is in this movie. He plays the interviewer in the very opening scene.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. He's in a lot of stuff.
He's in a lot of stuff, and he's got a show coming out with Adam McCann, HBO. He's going to be playing Chick Hearn. He's got a lot of good stuff coming up. Mm-hmm. But Quentin it was really cool, at the premiere, we walked up to say hi to him, and Quentin said, because my friend Spencer really looks like he's from that era. He doesn't even need to try. He's just that guy. And Quentin said to him, you were the most authentic thing in the movie. And so he was just like, oh my gosh, life made. Okay. Drop the mic.
I remember him being the guy that interviews Jim Carrey at the end of Yes Man, the cops the detectives that pull him aside. He's the white cop and the other guy's the black cop. They pull and question him about his Yes Man theory. Fury with that book. So
okay, I've he seen told Spencer. Me a really cool story that I'll say okay. really, really
was
quick.
Was he in Magnolia?
Yeah, he probably
yeah,
was.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I'll say this really quick, and I hope I'm okay, not going to be running trouble out of by time. Saying this. He was cast in a Marvel movie. He was cast in Iron Man 3, I think, okay. and he was supposed to play the president.
Ooh.
And oh. he ended up getting a smaller role, but because he got a smaller role, he's already been established in Marvel, and he can't go out for another Marvel movie.
Oh, wow. Doesn't that suck? That's like that. Yes. That's like that extra that's been making money every month, and then all of a sudden they give you a line, you can't come back.
Yeah.
Not that I know anything about that. All right, let's. We got less than we got a little bit over 6 minutes left. Let's close out real quick. Where do you rank this firmly? You rank this in your top five?
Well, are you put it as number one?
Well, I said it's the one I enjoyed the most, right. but I think his best film was still Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
So this is best.
What about you?
Yeah, Pulp Fiction number one for okay. me. I've probably got Inglourious at two.
Okay.
Jackie Brown at three. Django and this probably switch four and five.
Okay.
And then the Kill Bill. Do we count Death Proof?
I think you can count Death Proof.
Then that's dead last.
Okay.
The Kill Bills, Hateful Eight, and then Death
Okay.
Death
All right. Proof. For me, it's Kill Bill number one, and I do it together. The Bloody Affair, the whole Bloody Affair, both those movies together. That's my number one Tarantino film. Reservoir Dogs is second. I think I put Inglourious Bastards third, and then Pulp Fiction's third, then Inglourious Bastards, because I just don't love Pulp as much as everyone else does, but I also enjoy these other films. Just Reservoir Dogs, I think, is a sentimental nostalgia thing.
Yeah, see, I'm the other way with you. Reservoir is not so much. I probably have it around the same place as the Kill Bills for me.
Yeah.
And I have one way high. If we're separating them, I think Kill Bill 1's way better than 2.
If you separate them,
if we're putting them as one thing, they actually as one, they might be a little bit higher on the list.
And that's the way it was originally done. You know, Weinstein cut them up. And
And Quentin just talked about that.
Did he say it was one movie and Tarantino cut
it up? He did. He obviously said, it's one movie. It was...
But I think his answer was
it was released as two, but it's I made one movie.
There you go. Yeah. It's what I've been saying for years. It's one movie.
Nobody said it's two movies because there was end credits and
right.
Technically,
yeah, he said it is two movies.
But listen, it's both.
I agree.
This is me splitting hairs. all right. Well, that's our non-spoiler review of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I want to thank all of you all for watching us. Where do you think it ranks? Like, can you let us know what in the comment section? Like, let us know where you think it ranks for you. I put Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in the bottom five, but that certainly doesn't mean it's a bottom five film or bottom ten film. Rather, I put it in the bottom. I put it about six or seven, maybe.
No, and like we said before, I mean, we're talking about Tarantino.
Yeah,
he's never made a bad movie.
Right.
So it's not.
Do you agree? He's never made a bad movie.
This is what I'm saying. It's just not my personal taste. Right. But as a filmmaker, he's always been one of my favorite filmmakers.
He always makes good movies
because he makes great movies. Yeah. It's just not the thing that I'm going to watch over and over and over and over and over again. Okay. This one I will.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. One last thing. What do you think his 10th film will be? Do you think it'll be Star Trek? Do you think it'll be a Kill Bill Volume
3? He still sounds intrigued by the Star Trek thing.
I think I mean, if everything would have to align, as you know, Paramount's going to have to sign off of it, and everyone's going to have to sign off on what he wants to do. But I think if it's all green lights, he's ready to do it.
Yeah.
You know, again, everyone would have to say yes.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't happen, he talked about, because I did a roundtable with him last week, and he talked about, I've never done a remake.
Yeah.
Maybe I would do a remake.
Sure.
I think he's looking at, but then he also said, but maybe I'll find some story that is personal to me that I want to do that original story again. So I think he's, for the first time in his career, open to... the idea of studio things and bigger things that he hasn't done before.
I think that's it, Jamie, because this is his first studio film. Maybe he sees a whole new world now to explore as a filmmaker with more tools. And there's anything
a Marvel movie don't look so bad to him anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But maybe, and at the end of the day, I mean, it's one of those things, even if he does Star Trek and that's his 10th movie, you can't tell me this creative force is just going to sit back and be inspired and not write it and make another movie. Yeah. Of course he is.
That's certainly possible.
I've had a hard time believing that, too. I mean, he talks about maybe I'll write a book. Maybe I'll do plays. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think
he's got so much more.
We've seen this before with Soderbergh. Yeah, I'm retiring. Yeah. No more movie. And then
there's nothing. Nothing athletes love better than claiming to retire and coming back all the time. And look, it could be like a Beatles situation. I know we got to wrap up. It could be like a Beatles situation here where they said we're not going to tour anymore, but they went in the studio, had more tools, and created even better films.
Right.
Is that possible? We'll see.
That would be so much fun. To see him do something different.
Yeah, I'm not ready to have Tarantino retire. I'd love some more. Tarantino in my life for the next, you know, decade.
Agreed. We'll agreed. Well, that's been our review of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I want to thank all of you for watching Film Critics Weekly. That's brought to you by the LAOFCS. Jamie, where can they find you real quick?
Find me at Fieldbrock on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram.
There you go. And Nikki Novak.
At Fandango and at Nikki Novak.
There you go. And you can find me at The Roka Says on Twitter and on Instagram. See all the crazy stuff I do there. I don't want to get us in trouble.
It's like a Quentin Tarantino review.
This is a Tarantino review. We can swear.
That's right. Thanks to Ryan in the booth for helping us out today. We'll see you next week with another episode of Film Critics Weekly. Take care.
Woohoo! From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.